RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on the various episodes. But this week, we are going to be breaking down a little bit of San Diego Comic-Con and some other announcements that have happened this summer on our Summer Special 11. We're going up to 11 this month.
11's my lucky number.
It is it?
Yeah. Well, that's my birthday, right? 7-11, so I like 11.
Do you get free Slurpees on your birthday?
I get free. I don't just get free Slurpees. I get real size free Slurpees. I don't have to get, you know, that little sample cup thing.
Really? You can get a full size one?
Yeah. Well, it's 7-11 I go to. Yeah. They give it. Yeah.
Wow.
See how lucky I am?
And it's not just because it's your birthday. Like, everybody gets the full sized?
No, it's because it's my birthday.
Oh.
They give me a full-size Slurpee because it's my birthday.
Oh, okay, so you've got to show them like ID, right?
That is actually the only time I ever go to 7-Eleven.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I don't have...
So 11. Summer Special 11. See, this is my show.
All right, man. Well, go for it. Take on over.
Oh, no. You should still be in charge. Make no mistake. We want it to be a good show. You have to be in charge.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, happy birthday from 7-Eleven here, like, I don't know, what, 3 weeks ago now, 4 weeks ago now?
Yeah.
Whatever it is.
That's about right. Yep. Yep.
So, anyway, we've got a bunch of different things that have come together. We've got stuff, just regular announcements. We've got San Diego Comic-Con announcements. We've got story announcements. We've got merchandise announcements, and if we have time, we'd also like to get to talking a little bit about some Legends of Tomorrow recaps, because while we thought we were going to be doing a Legends of Tomorrow podcast, it's just I don't think it's going to work for our schedules, so we're pretty much sticking to Flash and Arrow. But, you know, we'll talk about Legends of Tomorrow, where applicable, and so many of the characters showed up originally on Arrow, so we thought this might be a good place to give a little bit of that back. But first off, let's talk a little bit about Comic-Con here, the 2016 Arrow panel. Had you had a chance, well, obviously, I know you were out, like, during Comic-Con, you were on vacation or traveling, at least, but you saw a bunch of the news that came out, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I was keeping up on it. You know, I mean, I was on vacation that week, but, you know, I got to know what's happening at Comic-Con, you know,
I know. Important. I mean, it's kind of hard to not know. My problem is there's so much content that comes out. It's like, I always feel overwhelmed and then I just kind of can't catch up. Like, I catch like the big stories, like, you know, there's a trailer for Justice League and there was, you know, a sizzle reel for Arrow and stuff and things like that. And there's a lot of other cool stuff that goes on, but you got to dig through so many things. It's just really hard to find out. But again, no, I haven't found any like amazing things,
well,
but
you can focus on one particular franchise or show or movie or something at Comic-Con. But the problem is there's so many that I like.
Yeah.
that I want to see them all, you know? So luckily they kind of trickle onto the internet here and there throughout the next couple months, and
yeah,
I'll eventually see everything I need to know.
There pretty much 90% of the stuff that comes out of Comic-Con I want to know about. I would say there's, you know, a few things related to either some comics or, you know, some cartoons or other franchises that I really don't care too much about. Though there's always stuff that surprises me that I'm interested in.
Yeah,
so
I would agree. Yeah, and I would agree. There's almost 90% now that Twilight, you know, is no longer being made. That's it's a good high percentage. So,
well, the panel for Comic-Con this year was what I assume to be the basic a recurring cast for the show, plus executive producers Mark Guggenheim and Wendy Miracle. There was also John Barrowman, Willa Holland, David Ramsey, Stephen Amell, Emily Bett Rickards, Echo Kellum and Paul Blackthorne. So while I was afraid that and like I said earlier, it was a sizzle reel. So while I was afraid like David Ramsey or Paul Blackthorne might not really be back this season, the sizzle reel kind of put that to rest for me. It looks like they are there.
It did. It looked like they took the summer off to grow more hair on their head parts and, you know, it's all.
Well, yeah, that's true. Oh, I didn't even realize that. Yeah, you're right. Paul Blackthorne, like, has hair. He's not completely bald like he had been.
No, no. I think the only one that had the perfect hairdo was Mark Guggenheim on that panel. So,
nice guy,
good hairdo. That's
I think there was another part to the panel that I didn't see. I saw some on YouTube. I think it was like a 20-minute. It was the fan Q&A, which is cool because you can get some stuff there, but it's also kind of lame sometimes. So I didn't get to see a lot of the main announcements, but there was a lot of other announcements that came, you know, from other ways. I think the biggest thing was the sizzle reel, which we saw, which opened up, you know, teasing us with a little bit of the end of season four with the death of Laurel and her, you know, some of her last words to Oliver. And then we go into meeting a number of the new characters, and Oliver kind of setting up what appears to be like a training program for Wild Dog and Artemis, a.k.a. Evelyn Sharp, and then Echo Kellum's character, Curtis, who's going to become Mr. Terrific. We saw Curtis taking his turn on the Salmon Ladder, which I find very humorous because, of course, in the comics, Mr. Terrific is an Olympic athlete and a superb physical condition. That's what I'm trying to get
at there. Well, even in this one, I think they've established that he's a pretty athletic guy. But, I mean, despite the fact that he looked like, you know, me on American Ninja Warrior, he's still – the Salmon Ladder is not an easy thing to do. So, you know, he's got to get that part of his upper body working. That's why he's there to train.
I just thought you picked up the bar and you could go. I mean, really, is it that hard? It doesn't look
Have you ever tried one? I've never tried one.
I have before. Never tried one.
I want to
I don't
try
go
one
to CrossFit or anything like that.
Nobody so. Around, so – I just.
I mean, it's just like doing a pull-up, right?
And I can put some nails in my garage.
I can do like a pull-up, I think.
Well, apart from us attempting things that we shouldn't be attempting, that's it was a good sizzle reel. Why can't I ever remember the word sizzle reel? It was a good sizzle reel, and it looked like Echo Kellum is going to be a major part of the team next year, maybe, huh?
Well, I mean, he is a regular, what do they call it, a recurring cast member. So his name's going to be right up there on the starring Stephen Amell, Emily Bett Records, all that before they get to the and guest starring card. So, you know, presumably he's going to be in every episode, and his pay got increased. I guess that's probably how that works.
Probably the important thing for him there, so that's good.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So some of the things that they talked about. Let's see. Right before the sizzle reel got shown, I think I can't remember if it was that morning or if it was the day before, but the CW press people made a release saying that they had another new vigilante that was coming to the show. So based on what we had talked about last episode, last summer special, we had Wild Dog, who I don't have his name here. He's played by a Hispanic actor who unfortunately don't have his name.
I will find that out for you.
We've got Artemis coming back. Evelyn Sharp, she wasn't Artemis in the original or in the last season. She was Black Canary, but they're going to have her become the Artemis character on the show. And then,
Rick Gonzalez is going to be playing Wild Dog.
Who is it?
Rick Gonzalez.
Rick Gonzalez
from Mr. Robot and Rosewood.
Oh, okay. Excellent. Thank you. And then we've also got the the character who becomes Vigilante in the comic books, but he's appearing potentially as a police officer to start with. He may have been the one that the Arrow was fighting with. It looked like there was just kind of a plain clothes guy that was fighting with the Arrow at one point in the Sizzle Riff. So I think that might be that Vigilante character, Adrian Smith, I think it was. So they announced one other character who is a vigilante, but he's kind of a magical. He's got magical powers, or powers that are magic based, named Ragman. And when I heard that, I'm like, did I hear that correctly? Ragman is who you're bringing to the show? Who is?
Well, Ragman. I think he is. It's just pronounced Mr. Ragman, isn't it? Is
that like Spider-Man?
Carl Spider-Man.
There is some Jewish folklore involved in him, as he, I believe he got his powers from a golem.
Interesting.
At one point. But this is a character who, when I was growing up, he was kind of one of those just weird, like, you know, X-list characters that just kind of showed up every now and again. I think he got wiped out in Crisis on Infinite Earths, but he had made a resurgence here in the last decade and was a member of a supernatural team of heroes called the Shadow Pact, which include Blue Devil and Hellblazer, I think, as well, the John Constantine. So he apparently is at least a character that looks like what a Ragman would look like is showing up in the sizzle reel as well. So I'm kind of interested to see what they're going to do with this character. Obviously, if Oliver is working with these other three potential superheroes and vigilantes kind of as a team, as a new Team Arrow, Ragman definitely seems to be out on his own. And that character, like I said, may have some kind of supernatural powers as well. So we're not sure if that's going to be a bad guy or a good guy, though we did get a little more information on the season 5 villain, Tobias Church, who is being played by The Walking Dead's why can't they just list all the stuff at the top of the articles? Anyway, Tobias Church he's a character that they're saying, you know, it's somebody Oliver like unwittingly created back in season 1 when he was a killer in a hood.
Right. Which is Chad Coleman.
Hmm?
Chad Coleman.
Oh, yeah, Chad. Yeah, I know Chad. which is really cool, the fact that they can do a story like that. So I'm interested to see what they're going to do with that. That sounds really cool. And then the trailer also showed what are going to be some of the flashbacks, and yep, there he is, Anatoly Kaneyev, the KG Beast, and Oliver and getting in some kind of fight club in Russia. So,
excellent. I'm actually very excited about the flashbacks this season. I am hopeful that they're meatier and more important than what we've seen the last couple seasons. And I'm really interested I've been interested since season 1 to see how he got involved with the Russians and how it affected how he became Green Arrow. So I'm very hopeful. I'm holding out hope that these flashbacks are going to be fun and important.
Well, it should be cool just due to the fact that this is the connective tissue. I mean, these flashbacks, they said, should connect with the very first moments of the first season where Oliver fires the flaming arrow into the bonfire. And, I mean, he's going to be in Russia, but we know he gets shipwrecked back on the island. Like, how is he back there? He obviously has been there for a while because his beard's all grown out and everything, you know, so.
Maybe. He may have arranged passage back there, so when he was picked up, it looked like he had been on the island for
Oh, so
years.
It could have been an arranged pickup, like he knew these guys were going to be there or whatever, right?
Right.
But that's the thing. We don't know. So, yeah, I'm just to have this kind of connective tissue back to that first season. That gives me hope, for the season and what they're going to do with the characters. And, you know, they've changed stuff. There was talk about the Flash premiere, which Barry Allen has changed the timeline. And since the shows share, the same universe, people have been asking, you know, will the Flash impact Arrow? And Stephen Amell says, oh, yeah, major impact. Well, I think he was really kind of being facetious there. He probably doesn't know. But later that evening and during the Flash panel, they kind of teased the Flash producers, teased that, yes, there was an impact on Arrow, and it's related to Diggle. So we know Diggle went back into the military at the end of season four, and he hadn't left his wife and kid. I mean, he left them to go into the military, but it wasn't that he was still married and everything like that. But
right.
You know, what does that mean?
He needed to go get his head together. He needed to kind of, after all that stuff that happened with his brother.
Yeah.
He had to find himself again. So I don't know. Eventually he's got to make his way back. It looks like he is going to be on season five, which is great. I'm very happy for that.
Yeah.
And I honestly don't think that's going to be the part of it that Flash is going to change. Like, they're just going to take that away. Like, he didn't go. And they say it's going to have to do with Diggle. I get the feeling that I don't think we'll see how Barry changing the timeline is going to change the Arrow show until we get that crossover. Because otherwise I'm not sure how you would work it into.
How do you explain it? Like, hey, I know you guys haven't been necessarily watching Flash, but hey, there's a show called Flash and we had a guy time travel and change a bunch of stuff. So now this has changed. Like, how would the characters explain that?
Well, and you can't just, you know, start season five saying, Oliver's not mayor. Laurel's not dead. Diggle didn't leave. I mean, you can't really do that. So, I mean, you can, but it would be bad.
It's lazy.
It's very lazy writing. So I don't think we'll find out how Barry has affected Oliver's world here until the crossover, which is, you know, the first half of the season. So,
yeah. Yeah, the first third of the season, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So one other thing that happened on the panel, someone had asked something about the fact that there are several of the actors that were on the panel that sing, and they wondered, had you seen this clip yet?
I haven't seen the singing clip, no.
So they asked him to sing. So Stephen Amell started singing "You'll Be Back" from Hamilton.
And oh, nice!
Echo Kellum and Emily Bett Rickards joined in, and Echo Kellum has an amazing voice. He hit the high note with an amazing falsetto. But then, of course, John Barrowman. If you're familiar with the song, there's a kind of a chorus. It's just ba da ba da ba 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 da ba da, and John Barrowman took that part, just hamming it up, you know, for the entire audience. Obviously,
wow! So, I'm glad to see he's coming out of his shell a little bit.
Yeah. He doesn't do that too often. But what I thought was interesting that they chose this song, "You'll Be Back." I feel like this is a not so coy commentary to fans who have been disappointed with seasons three and season four. Obviously everyone's talking about Hamilton, it seems like, and that's a pretty popular song from the show that everybody likes. But
hey, Hamilton was shot on July 11th. I'm just saying.
What?
So bringing it back.
Really?
Yeah, that's when the famous duel between him and Aaron Burr was. July 11th.
Aaron Burr.
Yes.
Wow. So it's really all about your birthday. I got it.
It is. Sorry. We're just bringing it back to the 11th, man. Just bringing it back.
Okay. You keep going with those. See if you can work in a couple more July 11th references here as we finish out the show. That's
I'll
your challenge.
I can come up with.
Okay. So if anyone hasn't seen that, there are several videos that are just focused on their song, and I thought that was pretty cool. Arrow's going to show up later in October on Netflix. Well, season four is. And so it looks like
Well, now, if you remember, I think it was this last season that you and I were talking about Netflix and how they couldn't come to an agreement with Netflix, with, I guess, the CW or mm-hmm. the companies that make these shows. And so we were afraid that we weren't going to get any more of these shows on Netflix at all. But they have finally come to an agreement. But unfortunately, we're not going to see the season start until probably October because of the licensing deals and when they take effect. So October is going to be the earliest we will see Arrow on Netflix.
Yeah, so the season premiere is on October 5th, and they're saying that season 4 will probably show up on Netflix around the same time as the premiere. So, you know, it's not for people that are really going to try to – should be trying to catch up on the show. But what's cool is, as you said, the CW in total has worked out a great deal with Netflix, which the new deal is 8 days. 8 days, 1 week and a day after the season ends this coming year. So when Supergirl season 2 ends 8 days later, and when Flash season 3 ends 2 days later, etc., they will be on Netflix.
Yep.
So you can start watching, like, oh, I missed the beginning of the season, or I want to watch it again immediately. You'll be able to just wait a week and you can watch the entire season on Netflix. So that's really cool.
Which is really pretty amazing. I mean, I know that networks like to kind of keep hold of their shows sometimes, and sometimes they can show repeats of them over the summer or people that haven't seen them or something. But
right. And they still may.
Yeah, they still might. They still might.
Because not everybody has Netflix or Hulu or, you know, whatever.
But that is very quick for a series to be on Netflix, I would think. I don't remember anyone being on Netflix.
No,
so. No,
that is really quick. Not even ABC has something that fast with, like, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think it still takes them a couple months.
Yeah, and I know some people maybe that actually only watch Arrow on Netflix. So I know that... that one in particular will be very happy to know that he'll be able to watch it sooner.
Yeah, because a lot of people, you know, it's like, all right, now everybody's talking about the show during the summer because people have caught up, and it's like, I still have to wait another 3 months before I can watch it or whatever. So that will definitely be great for people that have cut the cord and don't have TV or anything. Also, we found out that there will be a Vixen Season 2 animated show, which will have many more Arrow stars on it. So Katie Cassidy will be doing a voice on that, and I think Emily and Stephen Amell will be lending their voices to that. We found out that remember at the end of season 4 when Laurel had a secret to tell Oliver, and then we conveniently cut out to the waiting room and we didn't know what she said before she died?
Yes.
Well, they tell us that Wendy Miracle says that the season 5 premiere should, well, she says will, but, you know, I'm really not going to believe their promises until they follow through. But she says it will reveal what was said at that point. So Katie Cassidy will also be on the very first episode of season 5, which I know has led a lot of people to wonder if that means she's still alive. And I know you and I have talked about this, and I've mentioned this on some message boards and I think on Facebook and stuff, and the fact that I think for them to reverse that, if that would be the thing that, like, Barry changing the timeline did, that would just negate any impact and just – I mean, I think a lot of people would be happy because they did such a great job with Laurel last season, and then to kill her off, I understand, you know, why, again, they did it from a story standpoint, but – it's kind of too bad because everyone's like, oh, we don't get to see her again. Well, I think personally it's going to be a flashback. We're going to flashback to seeing what she told Oliver. So I think there's that. But she's worked
that would be totally Bobby Ewing the whole thing if they made her alive. I mean, that
right.
You lose almost a whole season of stuff that was really important and powerful. So.
Right, and it drove the characters in a certain way. And by the way, kids, that was a reference to Dallas, which was a evening soap opera along with, like, Dynasty and Falcon's Crest during the 1980s.
Oh, that's right. That's right,
because maybe people don't know who Bobby Ewing is.
J.R. Ewing. J.R. Ewing was a main character, and that's J.R. That's my initials. That wasn't an 11 reference. Sorry. You haven't said anything yet. Sorry.
Jay. Okay.
Sorry. All right. Keep going.
So keep going. Okay. So anyway, Katie Cassidy's worked out a sweet deal, much like John Barrowman and Wentworth Miller, to appear on every superhero show that the CW does. That means she has a contract saying that she will be appearing on Supergirl, Flash, Arrow, and Legends of Tomorrow. Now, Legends of Tomorrow is kind of a no-brainer, and we've already seen that there's the Earth 2 version of her on Flash. So how will she continue appearing on Arrow? Well, we do have the flashbacks still, so there's that.
Yep. And I think that is the only way she is going to appear on Arrow, is in flashbacks.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, that sounds reasonable, unless her long-lost twin sister... shows up.
Jeez. Oh, no.
Barrel.
Barrel. Okay.
And then how is she going to appear on Supergirl? Again, if Supergirl in the crossover, I see that happening potentially in some fashion. But otherwise, I don't know. So, hey, great for actors that they can work out things like that where, you know, you're getting committed work. I mean, that's got to be awesome. So
that is great, especially considering your character's dead.
Yeah, the fact you can work that kind of stuff out. The sizzle reel showed us that that as we've pointed out previously, Arrow will have a new title card for season 5. It's a very simple Arrowhead. It's got a few nicks and scrapes on it. It's kind of like a combo of the season 2 and season 4 Arrowhead. But every season, and you can check this on our Facebook page, we've got a photo gallery with the season 1 through 4 images. And I actually posted some images from the season 5 sizzle reel there to get people talking about stuff. But you can see the difference in the Arrowheads. Now, one thing I did notice also in the sizzle reel, while I'm mentioning that, is there's a training montage. It's like six shots or something like that of Oliver working with Curtis and Evelyn and Wild Dog, whatever the character's name ends up being, because there have been several Wild Dogs in the comics. But we see it from the cameras up top looking down towards the floor. Very familiar honeycomb pattern on the floor. So it appears that Oliver is making good use of Damian Dark's old hive facility this season. Make sense because they're
old. He's not using it.
Well, right, because their old one was under the campaign office, wasn't it? The one they were using last season was under the campaign, the Oliver from Arrow campaign office, right?
I thought it was under the... Oh, you mean the old Arrow cave?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. I thought you meant Damian Dark's
thing. Right, so they would have to move out of there because he's not using the office anymore. So he really couldn't justify probably keeping that on now that he's mayor, or potentially still mayor. So, yeah, they probably just took over the old hive facility. But so I thought that was cool.
Wasn't Damian Dark? Didn't they have a hive facility under City Hall? Isn't that where one of the hubs of magic, which I don't think was the name of them, but isn't that? I'm trying to remember. Something was going on under City Hall, and that's why his wife needed to be mayor. So I don't remember.
Yeah. I think that was
maybe
true.
Nearby. I don't know.
But he also had one under that dome thing.
Yeah. Right.
Which I don't know.
Either way, you know, like I said, it's up for grabs. He's not using it anymore.
Yeah.
Not on this show, anyway.
And Oliver seems to get a new costume or a revised costume that has more sleeve on it.
Climate change, you know, in Star City. So it's getting colder. So.
And we also found out, again, from the Flash panel, that Felicity was going to show up on Season 3, Episode 2 of The Flash. So that's
always fun when those two characters are together. I like that.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting if we're still doing the Flashpoint, seeing her interact with the alternate versions of the characters.
Oh, yeah. And that, I would guess, that would still be Flashpoint if it's only episode two.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
She may not have known him yet.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Wow.
Interesting. Oh, no, now I'm even more interested in seeing that episode.
That could be interesting. So, and then they've announced the titles for the first three episodes, but what I find more interesting about this is the fact that stunt coordinator James Bamford is directing the first two episodes. Both of the first two episodes are being directed by him.
Awesome. That means we're going to see some good fight choreography, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. And so first episode's called Legacy, and the second episode's called The Recruits, which I would assume references the three people that Oliver will be training here. So, and like I said, there was kind of part of a training montage in the sizzle reel, so looks like there's a lot more to that as well. So
I mean, that's cool. That's totally cool.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of good stuff coming here at the, you know, at least at the outset. And we probably know about stuff that's within the first four or five episodes, I would guess, based on stuff they've talked about. So. Right.
Now the third episode, A Matter of Trust, is the title. That was just revealed very recently. You think that's like the Billy Joel song?
That's exactly what I thought of, and that's what I tweeted at Mark Guggenheim. I tweeted him the Billy Joel video for A Matter of Trust.
Yeah,
that's it's
any response back from him?
Not that I heard.
So you should have complimented his hairdo. I'm telling you, it's all right. Well, I would very much like to talk with you at some point this season about what Bruce Springsteen song we're going to see at the end of the season. So
we need to revisit that. And our next one. Oh boy. That was tough last year.
It was tough, but it was really fun. And we were, you know, we didn't get it right, but we had a few,
we were in the ballpark, I think.
Yeah. I think we were pretty close considering it was almost a year ahead of time. So
yeah, we were dressed and, you know, moving in the right direction. So.
We had some of the same characters.
Yeah, exactly. So, well, hey, let's take a few minutes here, and if you don't mind, and why don't we recap some of the Legends of Tomorrow episodes that people may be interested in. If you weren't watching that, or if you saw the crossover between Flash and Arrow, but you maybe never continued on with the show, you can get a little bit of get a little bit more information here. So. Legends of Tomorrow, I was never really clear on like how many episodes they were trying to do. It was a weird season. I thought they were going to do it as kind of a mid-season, you know, like break show, the same way they did Agent Carter for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So I figured it was going to be like an 8 to 10 episode, you know, short arc. And they ended up starting during the break, but then continuing and just ending at the same time that Flash and Arrow did, and ended up being 16 episodes. So really, it was only six or seven episodes less than a full season of the other shows.
Yeah, yeah, it was. I went back at the beginning of my summer when all the shows had ended. I went back and kind of binge watched the whole season, which was really, really enjoyable. I had a great time doing that. It was kind of refreshed my memory on what each episode was about. So, you know, I thought we could just do a little recap of each episode, at least the first half of the season, and then maybe share maybe an aha or a huh, you know, from each one.
Okay. Well, let's see. The first episode was just called Pilot Part 1, and it shows that Vandal Savage – who had shown up in the Flash and Arrow crossovers. Going unchecked, he takes control of the planet in 2166, and he ends up killing Rip Hunter's wife and son. So the Time Masters, who are a like an oversight committee, I guess, for time travelers, kind of like a League of Assassins for time travelers, maybe? I don't know. They're the
time police.
They're
right?
The time police. The time cops. There you go.
Yeah.
So Hunter talks to them and they say you can't go after him. So of course he does. And he travels back to 2016 and recruits the new Firestorm, Hawkman and Hawkgirl, Captain Cold, Heatwave, White Canary, who is a revived, revigorated Sarah Lance, and Adam, the Brendan Routh character, to help him track down Savage through time. So they send... But the Time Masters, of course, don't want him doing this, so they have sent the time-traveling bounty hunter Kronos to stop the team of the Wave Rider. And they travel back to 1975 to get information from a professor named Professor Boardman, who, as we find out, turns out to be Kendra and Carter's son from a previous life. So Hawkman and Hawkwoman's son from a previous life. But Kronos attacks them and kills Boardman as they are trying to escape.
Yeah. So they really set up everything in this first episode as they're going to kind of pop through all these different times. So I pictured every episode was going to be a different time period. I'm very glad they didn't do that, actually. I'm glad they had little chunks, little story arcs mm-hmm. that took place in specific times. But interesting. The first couple episodes started a little slow for me, to be totally honest. Mm-hmm. I wasn't really sure how I was going to like the dynamic of the team, but as the season goes on, I felt a little better about it.
I was, I agree. And, I was watching the shows, I think weekly up to a point, and then I did start binge watching, like you had said. The first episode was just, it was really chock full. There was just so much to it. It was very dense.
Yeah.
Because they're, I mean, even though we had been introduced to these characters, it has to stand alone as its own show. So it was introducing and reintroducing characters, and you got to see footage that you'd already seen from some of the crossovers. And
I almost felt like the first episode I had already seen just on the commercials and previews for the show leading up to the show.
There was that, yeah. Yeah, it was like really the first 20 minutes you had seen, and then the rest, the remaining like 20, 25 minutes was new.
Yeah. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've heard Rip Hunter say, "You're legends." You know, I mean, just
yes.
Which you got to. That's the title of the show, so
right.
That's fine.
So why don't we switch back and forth? You tell us a little bit about episode two here.
All right, episode two, pilot, part two. Don't worry, the titles get more interesting then.
Okay, but, good.
All right, written by Mark Guggenheim and Phil Klemmer here. Now, they found that in 1975, Savage was selling big-time weapons. He's a big weapons dealer. So they go to one of his auctions and they kind of infiltrate
wasn't it
in
like,
the way that they do.
Was this the one in Russia or something?
I believe so, yeah. I believe this one was in Russia. They got the information. They're still in 1975, but they got the information from some of Professor Boardman's things. Because he was Carter and Kendra's son, he had been researching Vandal Savage. Because he knew that they were going to come back someday. He knew that they were going to be reincarnated. So they, of course, are not very good at spy work or infiltrating stuff secretly. They stand out like sore thumb. So, of course, they're forced to fight. In this fight, they do a good job. They win. But Ray loses a piece of his Adam suit, which, of course, Savage finds, and that gives him an opportunity to change the future in a different way by giving him more power much sooner. So Ray, Leonard, and Mick try to steal this dagger that can be used to kill Savage, while Martin, Jax, and Sarah, they go get the technology that Ray left behind. But in all the fights that follow, Carter... You know, that character that we've established, Hawkman, that he's, he's been in all the episodes, all season for both seasons, or for both episodes, he gets killed. He dies, and Savage kills him instead of the other way around. And that, of course, ends another one of his many, many lives.
That, that was a little disappointing in the fact that there's been all this buildup to having Hawkman and Hawkwoman, or Hawkgirl, even though they introduced her first, and then they go and in his, like, basically, I think his third appearance, they kill him off.
Yeah, I was shocked by that they'd killed him so early. I had no doubt that we'd see him again. I mean, this is a time travel show, for crying out loud. You can go anywhere and see anybody you want at any point. So, but I actually kind of liked it. I preferred some of the other characters' interaction with Kendra that we'll see later on in the season more than I did with his. So I was okay with it. I thought it took the story in an interesting place.
Yeah, the Carter character is a little stuffy and, you know, very proper. Like, because he always knows, like, well, this is how it needs to be. And Kendra doesn't really remember her previous lives, and so she's trying to, you know, do her own thing and live it differently and not what he expects and what they've done before little, and all that.
A little pompous sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. There was something else. What else was I going to add about this? And they also start establishing some of the rules for time travel here, which is that they can't go back to times that they've already been in. Basically, they can't go back to the same moments that the show's shown you already. Because of it's bad, you know, whatever. It's
bad time juju, right?
Right. I forget what they, yeah. There's a phrase they use about it being like key moments or things that you've done to, you know, can screw up the time stream or whatever.
Well, one of the, which I'm not sure how well they establish that, because I think later on in the season they do exactly that. But I did appreciate the way they developed some of the characters. And in this episode, I liked the way they were developing Mick and Rory. So mm-hmm. You learned a little bit more about them and their background. And I did like in the first part of the series how you start caring about some of these characters. At least I started caring about them.
Wait, sorry. You mean Leonard and Mick?
I did say Leonard and Mick. Yeah, sorry.
Mick Rory is – Mick Rory. I'm thinking that's Heat Wave, right? So –
yeah, sorry. What did I say? Mick and Rory.
Yeah.
Well, you know, he was learning a lot about himself too. So that's
and the fact that the guy that plays Rip Hunter used to play a character called Rory. So every time they talk about Mr. Rory,
all right. You know what? From here on out, it's Cold and Heat Wave, because that's how I know him. Okay. I always have to second guess of what I'm going to say for their names.
There but we go.
They did call them by their names in the show because it just fit better. But it was Cold and Heat Wave, Captain Cold and Heat Wave.
All right, so. Episode 3 is called Blood Ties. They're still in 1975. And Sarah and Rip go in on Savage's bank account trying to cut off his funds. And they discover that Savage's men guarding the bank, you know, so they take one of them to find their nemesis. But Savage is using Carter's body to extend his henchmen's lives. So the Legends have to go retrieve the body, get into another fight. Rip monologues about everything Savage needs to kill his wife and son in the future. Ray then has to save a dying Kendra by shrinking down and traveling through her bloodstream to remove fragments of the mystical dagger that Savage used to try to kill her. Unsurprisingly, he succeeds and then pops back out of her. That was an interesting little what was the movie? Incredible Voyage.
Oh yeah,
like homage when they did that, Martin Stein is trying to guide him through there, and you know, trying to convince Ray. I just remember this: Ray's in there, and he's like, "I don't know if I can do this," and Martin Stein's like, "Yes, you can do this." And it was equal parts fun and cheesy. I just recall that being just kind of weird.
Yeah, but I like that they used Ray's Atom suit, you know, and that technology in the series, and especially that early, to do it. It was a great way to use the superhero, the Atom.
Yes, yeah. Obviously have something that only he can fix there.
Well, I've always been kind of fascinated with the shrinking down kind of thing, like that movie Inner Space with Martin Short. I really like
it. Yeah, that's a good one too.
So, another thing I liked in this one. I'll save that. I'll save that as we go through the season. So, I thought this was a great one because of the Atom suit. That was my favorite part of this. And I really thought, you know, Hawkman did a great job in this. Some great acting. So he really seemed
dead to
me.
He died in the previous episode, didn't he?
He really seemed dead to me. Okay. Yeah, but they had his body. You know, they were using his body in the little Vandal Savage cult thing. There,
yeah, the little disco cult that they had going on.
I bought into it. I thought he was dead.
Okay.
So, all right. So let's move on to episode 4, White Knights. Love the title of this one.
Very reminds me of a Mikhail Baryshnikov, Gregory Hines movie from the 80s.
That is good because it took place in the 80s. They went back to 1986 and they had to travel indeed to Russia. So they go all Mission Impossible in the Pentagon on this one, and they retrieve a file with information about a Soviet scientist named Valentina Vostok.
AKA in the comics... is a Negative Woman.
Oh, see, I didn't even know that.
I believe.
She never said anything that would happen in that one, did she?
She was a member of the Doom Patrol in DC Comics, but not here.
Look at that. I'm all into the Legends of Tomorrow. I didn't even check that out. But Ray and Snart track her down while Rip talks to Time Master Zaman Druce. And, you know, this guy, this is like his boss, right? His time boss. He asked him to surrender, and of course... You know, he betrays Rip, because what are you going to do? You know?
What a jerk.
Well, Dr. Stein finds a Soviet research facility where Savage is trying to duplicate Firestorm's power and build an army of Firestorms. That's a bad thing. Stein, Ray, and Mick are all captured, and everything is looking KG bleak.
Oh, boy. All right, so in the next week, we got episode 5, Failsafe. So, which is basically a direct continuation, a reference to a 1960s movie about the Cold War. I think it's got George C. Scott in it, if I'm not mistaken. Great film, by the way. So even though she's pretty cute, Dr. Vostok tries to get Dr. Stein to reveal the Firestorm formula, but he is strong and resists for a long time. The Bratva, which we know about from Arrow, the Russian mob, helped the rest of the team infiltrate the gulag to rescue their comrades, teammates. And Savage ends up torturing Ray, Adam, and Mick, Heatwave, and forces Dr. Stein to talk. They end up, kind of getting in there just in time to see Dr. Stein merging with Valentina, you know, if we know what I mean, right?
Yeah.
In obviously to create a new Firestorm.
Right, that's what I thought you meant.
Right, right. I mean, we are talking about a comic book show here.
Right.
And Jax is there for kind of moral support and is able to get them separated, causing his new Soviet partner to explode. And as the team makes their escape in the Wave Rider, that is, Kronos attacks again. And the Wave Rider, you know, jumps through time and ends up crashing in Star City 2046, where they are greeted by the Green Arrow. Well, actually, I should correct that. They are more like threatened by somebody that looks like the Green Arrow.
Ah.
Which I thought was a great little tease to end this particular episode. At obviously we were thinking, oh, wait, that doesn't look like Oliver, but this is the Green Arrow that we actually saw in The Flash. When The Flash traveled in between worlds to Earth 2, there was a blip of a African-American Flash, and that's who we ended up seeing here. Sorry, African-American Green Arrow.
Green Arrow. All right.
And that's who we ended up seeing here. Yeah.
Yeah. A fun episode. I like the Firestorm effects in this one. When Dr. Vostok exploded, that was kind of a fun way to end that too. So, a lot of action in this one of them breaking out. So, and it reminded me a lot of Prison Break from
with Wentworth Miller and the other guy.
Yeah, and the other guy, right, Heatwave. but it led up to an episode I was really looking forward to, which was episode 6, Star City 2046. Which I think I used to play a video game back in the 80s of that one.
It does. It does remind me of like a video game title or
something. That was the one with the two joysticks, right?
Yeah.
Like Robotron. All right. So,
Stop the intruder.
I love that game. So their green friend here turns out not to be Oliver, actually, but John Diggle Jr. Also known as Connor Hawk. That name probably sounds familiar to you since that is in the comic books. Oliver Queen's son, but in this one, John Diggle's son. He tells him that he believes Oliver has been dead for like 15 years when Slade Wilson's son, if you know who Slade Wilson is from Arrow.
Oh, Deathstroke.
That's right, Deathstroke. His son, Grant, not Grant Stroke, but Grant Wilson. That's not sure Grant was the... nothing wrong with the name Grant, don't get me wrong, but I don't know. When I hear the name Grant, I don't think Deathstroke Jr. here. But he came to town and pretty much trashed the place.
Yeah.
Now, if they'd only kind of just looked in the old Arrow cave for Oliver, he probably would have discovered, like our heroes, that Oliver is not dead, but brooding about his failure and, of course, the loss of his arm while growing a stunning beard.
Oh, yes.
Yes, Oliver gives them the information they need to repair their ship, but he won't help them. But then Grant Wilson kidnaps Connor Hawk, so Oliver decides to join in the fight with the Legends' help. Connor decides to continue the work as the Arrow, and the team goes back to their timely road trip.
Now, while I was looking for Oliver to kind of fire his bow one-handed in the same way that he did when he was missing an arm from Batman The Dark Knight Returns, the comic mm-hmm. series that Frank Miller wrote
Legendary.
In 86. Yeah. He had a robotic arm that he used. So
yeah.
they
darn it.
Kind of got around that. So I was a little disappointed, but I thought it was a fun cameo to jump forward in the future. We found out that it was no longer Queen Consolidated or Palmer Tech. It was now like Smoke Industries, I guess.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. And Sarah was a little confused because she, of course, oh, this is my home. I know what's going on. But, you know, they are 30 years in the future here. So yeah. It was not
and
quite
I did like.
Thought.
I did like in this episode quite a few nods to the comic universe and specific storylines in the Green Arrow comic universe. So,
yeah.
And we got to see Stephen Amell with the, I won't say the classic Green Arrow goatee, but with some Green Arrow facial hair.
Yeah. Yep. So then the next episode, number 7, was called Marooned. So as they've taken off, but because Rip Hunter hasn't upgraded the Wave Rider's operating system lately, the trail for Savage runs cold. He then gets a distress call from another time ship, and Rip gets the brilliant idea to steal their AI software. But pirates, unfortunately, have taken over the other ship, and they want the Wave Rider too. So everyone but Dr. Stein is captured, and a hole in the ship is slowly spelling doom for Snart and Sarah. Stein ends up rescuing everyone. Ray fixes the damaged ship, but Mick betrays everyone to the pirates, you know, just because he's a jerk. But fortunately, Snart stops the bad guys and captures his friend. Unfortunately, he says he'll kill him so he can't betray them again. But we, you know, it's one of those things. It's like, he'll kill him, but we just really don't see what ends up happening.
Right, right. He takes him down to the forest there and points a little gun at his head and, oop, change scene. Yeah, I can't even elaborate on that, but he is a jerk. That was pretty much it.
Yeah, yeah.
But interesting things happen in this episode that will be important later on. So, well, let's do one more episode for this summer special here.
Okay.
We'll talk about episode 8, Night of the Hawk. And now this is going to be a pivotal episode as the series goes forward. So
yeah.
I'll tell you what this one is when they traveled back to 1958. I found this time period very interesting on this show. This was one of my favorite episodes. They were investigating some murders that seemed to be tied to Vandal Savage. So Sarah and Dr. Stein disguise themselves in a mental institution as doctors, not as mental patients, but to discover that Savage has actually been using a meteorite with the same powers that had originally transformed Carter, Kendra, and him in ancient Egypt. And he's using those to transform young people into these weird bird-like creatures. So Jax tries to help this young girl in that time period, this high school girl, but he ends up being captured and taken to Savage for transformation into these one of these bird thingies as well. So Dr. Stein discovers a cure for this weird bird flu, and they save Jax, but then Kronos shows up, and they're going to have to make a quick getaway, which ends up stranding Ray, Kendra, and Sarah in 1958.
I, too, love this episode for several reasons. One being that Joe Dante, the director of Gremlins and the aforementioned Inner Space, actually, directed this. It was a great way because Kendra and Ray are starting to fall in love with each other, or at least have some mutual attraction. And her being an African-American character and Ray being white is fine. But of course, they're in 1958 and they are now stranded and have to kind of pretend to be a couple. Plus, you've got Sarah, who's a lesbian on the show, and of course, 1958, like, what is, you know, what do people know about that? So it was a really interesting way to discuss a number of social issues having to do with race and sexuality, sexual orientation, I guess, on the show without really, really talking about it. So I thought that was kind of cool.
It was a great way to explore these characters in a time period that really contrasted what they could be like back then. So
yeah,
that's why this was one of my favorite episodes of the entire season. So I guess in this one there was quite a bit of action and time stuff going on because of the bird stuff, but it led to some other stuff, so we can get into that at another time.
I will tell you, this was right before a short break they did, and I was very excited. And that's a good reason for us to stop here. But I will also tell you, when we come back and we start working on the second half of the season, I was rather disappointed. And we will talk more about that on our next episode, because that is about all the time that we have for this week's episode of Green Justice, with a slight visitation to the Legends of Tomorrow.
That's right. Well, if you enjoyed this episode about anything we talked about with Arrow or Legends of Tomorrow, or if you have other things that you have heard or want to know about from any of the Comic-Cons that are coming up, it's a big convention season, a lot of stuff going on here leading up to the new seasons. We'd love to hear some feedback from you on iTunes. So hop on over there, give us a review, and give us some good comments. We'd love that. It kind of helps spread the word. Also, you can contact us. Tell us how you're feeling and what you want to hear. GreenJustice@randomchatter.com. is our email address, or you can find us on Twitter at Green Justice Pod, and you can also go to our Facebook page where we try to put news stories and pictures and things that we hear, and we love hearing from you over there too when you share stuff with us, and that's facebook.com/Green Justice Podcast.
You can also check out some of the other shows that we do, including Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, which we just had an episode released, also talking about the information from Comic-Con, a little crossover there with some Green Arrow stuff that we talked about, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which we should be having a new episode in a couple weeks to talk about a little bit of the cool stuff that was revealed at Comic-Con, plus some other information, though they don't nearly have as much information as the CW puts out. You can find all of these shows via randomchatter.com or in the iTunes Store or through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And of course, if you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us. We'd love to have new listeners join us. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.